You're listening to Wheelationships.
Good to see you. Thank you for coming this morning. Those of you that were here last week know that we introduced the topic of values last week, and we talked about, as a result of living in this imperfect world that we live in, imperfection is going to creep into our lives, in our relationships, bad things as well as good things, and they're both going to be there, especially those negative things, to the level that we tolerate them. They're going to increase in proportion to their importance to me. Even the good things, the more important they are to me, the higher level they will have in my life, and I will allow them to be in operation into my life. We used honesty as an example. If you value honesty, you're not going to tolerate dishonesty. You're not going to look the other way or turn a blind eye when there's a dishonest action happening before you, or that temptation for you to be dishonest in some way. You're not going to tolerate it. You're going to be keenly aware of honesty's presence, and you're going to be keenly grieved when honesty is absent, when it should be there. I was awakened up in the middle of the night, and so strongly on my mind, I thought, one of the phrases you need to say this morning when you're talking about that is that phrase of, no one has to know. If that line is going through your mind, no one has to know, you need to squelch it. That is something that is a lie. If nothing else, God always knows. But that's one of the ways that dishonesty can creep into our life, because we believe the lie, nobody else is going to know. That's not true. You need to be a person that honesty is something that you value. But we mentioned that Hebrew word for value in 1 Samuel 26:24. It means to make large, lift up, or magnify. And I want you to keep that definition in your mind, especially over the next several weeks as we talk about values and the different values that we need to have in our life. What are you magnifying in your life? What is your life showing other people that you value? We need to lift up those values and make them large. Now, to value something means it has worth or importance to you, obviously. We can value positive things, but we can also make negative things values in our life. If security is important to me and I value it, I'm going to stand against anything or anyone that threatens my security. If self-preservation or the opinions of other people are important to me and I value those things, I'm going to guard them, I'm going to protect them. My actions, my attitudes, my behavior are all going to be dictated by my trying to preserve that which I value in my life. I'm going to protect its existence by my choices, behavior, and by those boundary lines that I'm placing, those fences that I'm having in my life. Now, who of you that was here last week remembers what did we talk about was the worst value you could have?
Happiness.
Yay, Keith. happiness. We learned happiness is a result. It's not a value. It's the result of going through those difficult moments, those really hard seasons, working through them, and happiness becomes a result of that perseverance. It's not a value to pursue. Now, there's nothing wrong with being happy. I want to make sure you get that message as well. It's not like you can't be happy, but happiness should not be something that you are going to chase after, that you're going to pursue, that you're going to protect, that you're going to guard, and that you're going to try to preserve in your life, because when you do, you're going to miss opportunities for growth. And as we've mentioned, you most likely will be interfering with something good that God wants to do in your life by pursuing that happiness instead of working through and walking through the trial that He has, because He uses those trials, He uses the difficulties, He uses those unpleasant circumstances. We used the scripture in James last week to teach us, to mature us, to deepen our roots, both as human beings and as spiritual beings, and to mature us and draw us closer to Him. So it's very important that you don't chase after happiness in order to avoid something that's unpleasant to you. And chasing happiness, ironically, is going to make you an unhappy individual, because you're always going to be going after that elusive euphoria of happiness. But the thing about happiness is it's never going to last forever. You will eventually be unhappy again. And then what happens? You've got to chase after happiness again. So don't let that be your goal. And then finally, we concluded with categorizing people into two very general groups. The first group was those who focus on what they want, always desiring but never obtaining it. And then those who focus on what it takes to obtain what they want. There's a big difference there. They work, they delay gratification, they make sacrifices, and ultimately they obtain those things that they desire. So I want to begin this morning's session. We're going to go right to a clip that takes this whole concept of values a little bit deeper, and it talks about why values are important. I really liked the picture of character that he created for us there in that video clip, describing it as an engraved mark. I kind of picture like this chunk of wood or this big old stone there that over the course of time, engravings have been imprinted on its surface because of the circumstances that it encountered throughout its lifetime. And we're much the same way. Some of those engravings are beautiful, intricately carved marks. Other engravings are harsh, ugly gashes. And we all have both of those, but which of those have we focused on? Which has captured our attention to the point that we've given it value in our life? And he used the phrase here that I really liked also, the choice to be intentional. We have a choice to be intentional. But unfortunately, sometimes in life, we cater more to those ugly gashes than we do to those beautiful engravings. So much so that without even realizing it, we duplicate those ugly, harsh marks in our life today and into the lives of others that we encounter. And we make those imprints in other relationships. Parenting can be a very good example. If we don't make a choice to be intentional in the way that we are going to parent, we're going to get in that autopilot line he talked about, and we're going to parent according to the way that we were programmed to parent by our past circumstances and our childhood. And even those things that we've said, and we've all got them, not me, I will never do that. If you don't make an intentional choice to do it differently, before you know it, you will be your mother or you will be your father. It has to be an intentional choice. Now, in order to do that, we need values in our life, positive, strong values that act as limit-setting chaperones. And I love that phrase. I stole that one from him too. Limit-setting chaperones. Without strong, positive values, how are we going to know where the boundary lines need to be, what we need to base these intentional choices on? Certainly not our happiness. We heard a wonderful clip. If you weren't here last week, the video clip should be online. It's a great clip to listen to. Certainly not our feelings or emotions. Those come and go like the wind. We have to have values that are going to make a positive impact in strengthening our relationships. So you need to choose your values very wisely, because they will have a big impact on your life, those things that you're trying to protect and preserve. Now, the first and most important value that we must have, value number one, is the love of God. The love of God. And we're going to go right into one more clip. So in order to be successful in life, we have to value what God tells us to value. And we're not going to know what that is if we don't have a love for Him and a relationship with Him. He needs to be our limit-setting chaperone, not us. When we try to do that, there's problems because we are imperfect. We're selfish. We only see part of the picture. So God, in His infinite wisdom, gives us this command you see on your handout there, Mark 12:30. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength. That was His first and greatest command to His children above all other instruction. He placed this particular value, the love of God, above everything else. Why? If God is our orienting principle in life, we will not go in the wrong direction. And the picture I had in my mind in hearing that orienting principle, making Him that key figure, I thought of a compass. When you're traveling in unfamiliar territory, the most important things that you need are a map and a compass. They're going to give you the means to orient yourself so you're taking correct turns, you're heading in the right direction, you're ending up where you intended to end up without losing your way. And without a map, you're going to make a wrong turn. You're going to exit too soon. You're going to go in the wrong direction. That compass helps you find your bearings. It provides you a fixed set point that is never changing, that you can trust, that you can depend on, so that you will end up in the direction you're supposed to go, making the right turns that you're supposed to be making, so that you do not end up someplace that you never ever intended going. That's what He's provided for us. God's provided us with a map. It's called the Bible. He's constructed it in great detail so that we will know which way to turn without losing our way. And He even said this, you know what, I've given you a map. I've loved you enough to do that, but I'm going to do you one more. I'm going to give you one more better thing than even that. I'm going to give you a compass, and that's me. God says, I'm going to be your compass. I will be that fixed point on which you can depend. I'll never point you in the wrong direction. You can trust me. You can be assured that with me as your guide, you will head up in the place that you intended to. You'll go the right direction, and you'll be at the place that you intended to be. And when those difficult times emerge in life, when our happiness is threatened, when we're assaulted with circumstances that we did not ask for, when all of these things stand in front of us, in front of our eyes, looming bigger than life itself, how are we going to know what to do? You have to have your map and your compass in front of you in order to know what to do. But unfortunately, all too often, we decide that we make a better compass for our life than God does. Circumstances may require change on our part. We don't like change. It's hard. It's difficult. It can be very painful. And so we decide that I would rather do what's easy than do what's really tough. It would be far easier to please myself than to do what's right. So we set our own course and we decide to be our own orienting principle, our own compass, instead of God. But if you will just remember that in the end, when all is said and done, it's God with whom you will have to ultimately deal with, not yourself. I am not going to stand before me and answer to me for my actions and my choices, my decisions. I'm going to stand before God. And if I submit to that reality now, and I submit to His command now, His higher calling will challenge me to grow. And ultimately, I'm going to win. He promises me I will. And I can trust Him in that more than I can anybody else. That circumstance that was bigger than life will no longer seem impossible to navigate. I have that perfect compass. It's flawless. That relationship that seems so riddled with trouble will be a pathway to blessing if I trust my compass. My hopelessness will turn into hope-filled. But I have to use His map, and I have to allow Him to be my compass. I need to love Him more than I love myself or anything or anybody else. We need to love God enough to do what He asks us to do. And as a result, we're going to grow. That's why loving God must be first. He empowers us to change. And then He tells us how to change. He doesn't leave us to just try to figure it out on our own. With Him in charge, we don't have to be in charge. In fact, we can't be in charge because that position's already filled. What a load off my mind to know I don't have to be in charge. If we try to be the one in charge leading the way, and I want you to listen to this because this is so important. If you try to be the one in charge, you leading the way, then your limitations will be the limitations that govern that circumstance that you're in or that relationship. Your limitations will govern them. And how sad is that? I don't know about you, but my limitations are many. You know, if I sat down and got some encouragement maybe from Tim or Sally or something, I might could come up with a list of, you know, a few abilities, a few talents, but, you know, they're not going to be all that great no matter how hard I try because I have a lot of limits. I could try really hard. But nowhere on my list are you going to find these things that you find on God's list. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He can read your mind. He knows your thoughts. He clearly understands every motive that motivates you to do the things that you're doing. He never changes. He knows no limits. He is morally perfect all the time. He is always truthful. He is always wise. He is always faithful. He is always righteous. He is always loving. He is perfectly just. He is omnipotent. That means he has all power. He is incomprehensible, which means he is beyond our understanding. Now, Tim may argue that maybe that one is on my list because as a wife and a woman, he does not always understand me. But God is incomprehensible so far beyond anything we could possibly comprehend and understand. He is always perfectly good, not conveniently good or mostly good. He is always perfectly good. He is merciful. He is omnipresent. Again, as a mother of four, sometimes I felt like I might have a little bit of that omnipresent ability to be in more than one place at one time. But no, it's nothing compared to the omnipresence of God our Father. He always has been. He always will be. He is God. And that's amazing. His list is so much better than mine. He makes such a better, perfectly trustworthy compass. And while my limitations are many, he has none. I can think of one thing God can't do. He cannot make a mistake. It's impossible for God to make a mistake. And he's perfect. And even that one limitation that he can't make a mistake, he uses for my benefit because he loves me. He'll keep this promise to me, Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. Same verse in the message is written like this. That's why we can be so sure, I love that, that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into be something good. I can be sure of that. I don't have to doubt it. I don't have to question. I don't have to hope. I don't have to wonder. I can be sure. I want that unlimited resources of an all-powerful God leading my way. And in order for that to happen, I have to love God first. I have to do what he said. I have to love God first with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind, and with all my strength. When I lose my life to him, I'm going to gain life abundantly. I want to close with some interesting little statistical tidbits that we came across. I've been pondering this whole subject of values and love and love for God this week. I was reminded of a statistic we heard earlier in the month, so I did a little bit of digging to find out a little bit more background on it. Previous studies on church attendance show that 40% of Americans attended church regularly. And when that 40% number came out, it was kind of hit with mixed emotions. Some people thought it was very encouraged. That's such a high number. Yay, America. And then another part of it kind of looked in that one and said, well, you know, that seems awfully high. It seems a little inflated. You know, especially ministers, they were saying, that's not what I'm seeing in my church. I'm not seeing 40% attending regularly. So they did some later follow-up studies, and what they found that is, in reality, it wasn't really 40%. It was more like 20% attend church regularly, and there was a lot of factors that played into that. I'm only going to cover a couple of them. There was a very small percentage of people, when answered, I attend church regularly, looked at that and answered yes if they were at church for any purpose, even if it had nothing to do with worship. You know, any other activity, they call that attending church regularly. So that kind of skewed the numbers a little bit. Another factor that affected things even bigger than that is discovered that they found that when you and I are typically asked behavioral type questions, such as, do you attend church regularly? When's the last time you voted? How many times do you eat out a week? Even, you know, how frequently are you having sex with your spouse? Any type of behavioral type questions, they did not necessarily ask what was real, they tended to report what they think they do, not what they actually do, especially if it was a pattern in their past. When we're talking church attendance, a lot of people had a pattern in their past. If they were raised in a home where, by golly, mom and dad had them at church every single morning, even if as an adult they were no longer doing that, they responded that they did because it's what they thought, it's how they saw themselves. Or they responded what they think someone like them ought to be doing. So they, you know, they the surveyors there were going, oh, you know, people are saying I'm calling Americans lying. No, it wasn't necessarily reality, but it was their perception, and that's how they were answering. But what I found to be the most disturbing factor of all was that for many, many people, a regular attender meant they went to church one Sunday morning or less a month. That's what they considered to be a regular attender. If I went at least once a month or less, I'm a regular attender. Do you realize that's no more than 23% of the time? Since when is 23% regular? I couldn't help but think of Dwayne Courtney, one of our finest principals that Lee County has. Dwayne, if a student attended school 23% of the time, is that considered regular attender?
What's the principal?
That was mind-boggling to me. What we value matters. What we value will be magnified. It will be large in our life if we value it. If we don't value it, it will reflect in the choices that we make. So what we value matters. It impacts our life. It reflects to others what's important to us. So value what God values. Allow Him to be that limit-setting chaperone. Use His map. Take advantage of the compass that He's given us in our life in building your boundary lines and in your relationships in your life. Any comments before we free you from this place? Anything to add? All right. Take it with you. Have a great week. Thanks for coming. Come back next week. Value number 2.